How's it going, everybody? Welcome to the Austin 316 version of the podcast. This is Tall Can Sports 316, or only one place to turn when you hit an epic number like that, and that's with Matty Lang, who's on the line. What's going on, man? You ready to throw some stunners? Or?
Yeah, I am totally here to celebrate the 19th anniversary of Tom Brady being drafted today.
Yeah, that deserves a stunner. I don't even know why that had to come up right now, but fuck, guy's old.
He's just getting up there, man. I figured I'd get the Tom Brady talking early.
There are people out there who can drink who are like not even as old as that, or you know, right around the same age, who you know, who weren't born when he was drafted, who are now drinking. So happy birthday correct. To those people.
On those two topics, Stone Cold and drinking, did you see that tweet that I think the WWF or WWE put out that was Stone Cold trying fancy drinks?
You tagged me to go and check it out, man. Pretty funny. Maybe we'll share that actually, at Tall Can Audio on Instagram, at Tall Can Audio on Twitter. Stone Cold, pretty much just a beer guy, but, he was doing his best to try something different and just not quite feeling it. So that was pretty funny.
Like before we get onto the real sport talk, I guess I should ask you, since it is the 316 edition.
Yeah.
What is your favorite Stone Cold moment?
My favorite Stone Cold moment.
Or most memorable.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I'm kind of an old school guy. I didn't mind when he dropped Santa Claus with a stunner at one point. Yeah. I thought that was kind of fun. The beer truck's always, you know, top of mind for most people. But yeah, I think I like that where it's like, what an asshole, but everybody's still cheering for him. It's like a Philadelphia sports fan, right? They're used to booing Santa Claus and shit. So I don't know. It's probably stunner to Santa Claus. How about you, man?
I still am a huge fan of when he drove that Zamboni down.
Yeah.
And just went nuts with the stunners and the beer and just something about that. I think we must have been about 14, 15 yeah. at the time, right? Yeah. And just he just seemed like the coolest guy on the planet at that moment.
Well, so funny story. I don't know if you've heard of it. There's a podcast called Something to Wrestle, and it's hosted by a guy who used to be Vince's right-hand man in that era, right? So he knew all the backstage okay. stories and helped out with all that shit. And so I've listened to a couple episodes of that over the years, and he tells the story that when they went to do that stunt where Austin drives the Zamboni through the little entranceway there and comes out to the ring, he said it almost killed him because when they, you know, tested it out, obviously it all fit, everything worked, but then they put the, you know, the set up and then they have the curtains and stuff, so as Austin's coming through, he can't see, and they have a table set up there where they time the matches and communicate with the refs and stuff, and he said it like pushed him, yeah, it pushed him right up against the fucking wall, and Austin's got no idea he's even there. He said if he's like a half a foot further over to the right or whatever, he's like, I'm not still standing here. So it got a little crazy, I guess, backstage, busting out the funny to think that a professional wrestler doesn't know how to properly drive a Zamboni, but
you think that'd be part of the entry interview, right?
Honestly, man. So you know what, as we get into this stuff, I do need to say, because I don't think we're gonna spend much time on it here since you and I aren't exactly experts in it, but in all the craziness that went down on Tuesday night across the world of sports, the one that has been getting the least attention on Twitter but probably deserves a little more, the Guelph Storm come all the way back from 3-0 down to the powerful London Knights. And down again in Game 7, only to come back in the third period and win the game. So want to send a little shout-out to our buddy Steve McLean of the OHL Fanboys podcast. Huge Guelph Storm fan. He was at the game, and he's feeling no pain on Tuesday night. man, hell of a thing, because the Knights are always, you know, the evil empire and just kind of run roughshod over everybody. And so they were up 3-0, feeling like they were going to cruise all the way into the Western Conference Final. But Guelph Storm marched all the way back from 3-0 down.
Take that, Hunter.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and Dale Hunter's already catching some shit right now. I guess he and his coaches left the bench after the game instead of sticking around for the handshakes, which is a bad look for anybody. So no good there. But shout out to the Guelph Storm, and like I said, to our pal Steve McLean. Man, we got top end NHL stars getting swept. We got the Raptors rebounding. It's been a wild couple of days around here. Obviously, we got the Leafs up 2-1 on the Boston Bruins. Why don't we start, I guess, with the Raptors, because that's what's most fresh of mind. A horrible game one, which you can say almost any year, with the Toronto Raptors. Why don't you take us through, you know, your impression of that game? Because the Toronto Raptors were heavily favored. We talked on this show as we teed things up, which we put out Friday night. I think that's TCS 314, if you want to go back and listen to that, our NBA playoff show. And you kind of said, and what a lot of people were saying, you know, 4 or 5 games, it's going to be a tough series, but the Raptors should get it done pretty easily. It did not look easy in game one. It looked much easier in game two. But what have you seen so far in these two games?
Man, how bad? I mean, I know you're not the biggest basketball fan, but I know you've been getting into it more, you know, year after year.
Yeah.
That was an awful game to watch as a Raptor fan. And, you know, the first quarter started kind of predictably. The Raptors kind of came out, not timid like they have in past, but almost too nonchalant, trying to get everybody involved. But they were leading the way, so, you know, there didn't seem to be too much cause for concern. And then that awful second quarter happened.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody's looking at the end of the game, but really that's where the Raptors lost the game. And without my computer open and knowing the stats for sure, I think they ended up going down by about 14 or 15 points at one point in the second quarter. They couldn't hit a shot. It wasn't like they weren't getting open looks. They just went They turned back into the pumpkin, which is the Raptors in game one.
Right.
And they, at one point, were 1 of 9 from three ball. Oof. 1 of 9. And Fred VanVleet hit 2 big 3s towards the end of the half, I guess, and made the stats look slightly better. And here's the thing. When you're going to shoot that many three balls, you know, if you watch the NBA and you watch Golden State and you watch Houston – those stats average out over an entire game or over a series. But God, they didn't call any timeouts during that run. And they were leading when that Orlando run happened. Didn't call any timeouts. They didn't change the lineup. And I think they just dug themselves too big of a hole to be able to come out of.
Right.
Otherwise, I mean, there's been a lot of talk about, you know, Kyle Lowry played a bad game. Kyle Lowry didn't hit any shots, but he was still able to do some of the things he does, which is like, you know, he play calls, he moves the ball, he had a lot of assists. I think he had 7 assists and 7 rebounds,
right?
Which is nothing to sneeze at. You know, you want him to hit 20 points as well, but for whatever reason, it just wasn't his day.
Right.
There is nobody who could hit a three ball, and they had tons of open shots. And all that being said, it went literally down to the last possession.
Yeah. The Raps had the game in their hands still late in the fourth.
And more than that, we had a guy in DJ Augustine who was playing the game of his career.
Yeah, yeah.
And was just dead-eye shots, and you got to give it up to the guy. He hit that last shot with 4 seconds left or 3 seconds left to take the lead and force the Raptors to try a three ball. And I didn't really love the scheme we had with our last play there. Danny Green looked like he should have been the number one shooter. And when he was covered, they went to Kawhi. But he didn't really look like he was ready for the ball either. So it wasn't a great shot. It ended up being an air ball. We lost the game. The number of Raptor fans who were just losing their mind was, you know, we've talked about this, right? The bad Twitter vibes all over the town. And just losing their mind. And, you know, we were talking off air here. I was in a bar beforehand, and the groans coming out and just, you know, just the negative self-talk after
I've
that
game. I've seen this play before, right? Like, what are we doing here? This was supposed to be a new team, a new group. What are we doing here again?
Now, mind you, I looked at my friend and I said, it's game one. I'm not even upset yet.
All right. Well,
maybe this is just because I've seen this 5 years in a row. There was nothing about that game that I got upset about because I almost half-heartedly expected them to have a tough time.
Oof. Well, and why'd you keep it to yourself? Why couldn't you have let the rest of us in on it? Wouldn't have got so fucking involved. Because, man, this is, as you're saying, right, and I'm I'm sure I'm not the only guy like this who follows the team very casually through the season, but once playoffs come, I'm in. And you sit down and you're jacked and you're ready for some playoff basketball and let's go Raps. And game one, they come out and they take a big soft deuce at center court. And you're just like, fuck it. Like, what? You can't get invested. You can't get, like, what am I doing here? I thought you were the second best team in the East, right? Like, holy fuck.
And they are. And again, for a team that's changed their offense, and a team that takes a lot more threes now than they used to, and still don't really have a true dead eye shooter from three ball, you know, it's going to average out over a playoff series. Mm-hmm. And don't get me wrong. I mean, if this goes more than five games, this is going to be a total letdown.
Right.
And there's going to be questions about it. But even on the U.S. Radio stations and podcasts, they were kind of laughing this off. But after this game, I think the prevailing narrative, at least outside of Toronto, is that, yeah, Orlando is going to play you tough every game, but they had everything go right that game.
Right.
Pretty much everything but Terrence Ross going off went right for Orlando that game.
Which would have been so guys, Toronto to have that happen.
Right. And it was just the perfect storm of everything happening, and it still went down to the final possession. And to me, that told me, you know what, this is going to, you know, expectedly as today went, the Raptors were going to come out completely on fire, even though the refs seemed to have been trying to fix the score, at least in the first quarter, giving everybody on the Raptors three foul calls, sorry, including Kawhi. And full marks to Nick Nurse there for keeping Kawhi in the game, even when he had three fouls, and just saying, you know what, I'm going to keep my best player in the game and let him figure it out.
Right.
And it could have gone poorly, but a guy like Kawhi just settled in, managed to get his points and take any offensive fouls. He had some really questionable calls against him in that first quarter. And, you know, the Raptors today, they were the ones who hit the three ball. There was one point in the third quarter where I think Orlando was 0-for-6 from three ball. You know, these, like I said, these things are going to average out. DJ Augustine did not go off for 35 points this game.
Right.
Little things like that, right? And like we talked about last week, they're doing everything right. You know, they're taking Vucevic out of the game. They're moving him outside, having to guard Marc Gasol. That's what they want to do, right? You're going to let guys like Terrence Ross get his occasional shot in. You're going to let a guy like Aaron Gordon look really dynamic on the couple plays that he decides to play that game. But you keep the stars out of it. You keep them uninvolved. It's still going to be tough. Anybody who watched both those games know the Orlando Magic did not give up, until the very end of the game, where they put their bench in when it was finally out of reach. They're going to come out. They're going to counterpunch on, I think the next game's on Friday night. And the Raptors have to expect a very tough game on Friday night, especially in that first quarter, or at least that first half.
Right.
Because that fan base
is going to be until Friday?
I know. It's a very long break. It's Friday, Sunday.
Again, right? Because we just did Sunday, Monday off. Like,
yeah. And surprising that it's – I don't know what's going on in Orlando. Maybe there's a Backstreet Boy concert
on ice or something.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, unfortunate that just the way the playoffs ended up, Leafs and Raptors ended up being home in the same four-day schedule, which kind of put – this game should have actually happened last night.
Yeah.
But the lease schedule had already been released. So open that schedule up a little too much, but this does tend to happen in that first round between the NBA and NHL playoffs frequently, right?
Yeah. Well, so many arenas home to both leagues. So for your money, what we saw tonight, it was, what did it finish? 31 point blowout, something like that. Is this maybe not quite to that extent, but is this more what we should be looking at? Game one is the aberration. Game two is more where these teams are actually at. Or will you expect it to tighten back up when they get to Orlando?
I think it's somewhere in between.
Yeah.
Right? Game one was worst case scenario for the Raptors and best case for Orlando. Game two was definitely one of the best case scenarios for the Raptors. it's going to fall somewhere in between. I'm not expecting the Raptors to win every game by 30 points. But yeah, I mean, you know, we're looking at, you know, 4-6 point wins for the rest of this, which is what it should be. There might still be another blowout to happen, depending on how many times Kawhi just unleashes himself. Just an absolute cheat code today. It was every shot he wanted, especially in that first quarter. He was just when he wanted to get 2 feet of open space, he just got 2 feet of open space.
Yeah,
just repeatedly just knocking down those jump shots from about 12 feet out. That was the one thing I thought was a little bit different this game. They weren't just settling for that three ball,
right?
Because Orlando's giving you the 3 point shot, but having that ability to hit a couple shots from two ball, get your rhythm going, and then start making three balls, I think that was a huge difference. It did allow Orlando to kind of stay in the game, especially when Terrence Ross came in and hit a couple threes.
Sure, yeah.
There was a little bit of a mistake there. They had Fred VanVleet trying to cover him, and Fred VanVleet was on him as tight as you could be. He's just too short. Height doesn't measure heart, but in basketball, it still counts for something, yeah. Unfortunately,
yeah.
When you could just shoot over the other guy. So they didn't make that change in the second half where for a while Kawhi was covering Terrence Ross, and then we didn't hear from him too much after that point.
Last thing on this series, then, or so far, what we've seen, Kyle being roasted a little bit after game one, hitting 0 points. You know, I think it's reasonable to be frustrated or whatever. As the game ends up the way it does, that he doesn't have any points, I don't know that it was the deciding factor by any means. Would you say he was substantially better in game two?
I mean, head and shoulders better, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure if you asked him, he wouldn't have been too happy with his game one performance.
Well, see, that's the thing I think that rubs Kyle, or rubs a lot of people the wrong way about Kyle, because he was a little smug about it in the postgame. I do other things. My teammates know what I've written. You know, like, yeah, but 0 points, right? Like,
yeah.
He could have been a little more humble about it and said, yeah, I got to do more or whatever. It's an easy quote to throw out and be done. They're like, no, I do other things. You're like, well, yeah, come on, man. Like,
yeah, and I also don't mind it. I want a guy who's got a little bit of a chip on his shoulder, right?
Fair enough.
We don't always want the guy who, you know, the DeMar DeRozan, who's like, yeah, I could have done better all the time. Because at some point, you need a guy who's got a chip on his shoulder. And if he's being our number two scorer in any game, we're winning that game.
Yeah.
It's not even a question. And the truth is, he doesn't need to be the number two scorer, right? If Danny Green hits his shots, if I'm trying to think, Marcus Sol was a lot more involved today, so was Serge Ibaka. You know, it's supposed to be a team scoring event here, except for Kawhi, right? We know Kawhi is going to lead the way. He set the record for most the leading scorer in the most amount of games in one season, right? So the Raptors have never had a guy do that before. It was something crazy, like 45 games or something. And considering he only played in like 60 of them, pretty impressive, right?
So for sure.
The guy is going to lead the way. And, you know, Spicy P has been not struggling. I don't want to say he's been struggling, but definitely they're queuing in on him, trying to take him out of the game,
Knowing
how he can blow a game up. So we need Kyle to put up points. We don't need him to put up 25. But if you're getting anything over 20 points from Kyle, you know the game's very well in hand. He is the best point guard on either of these two teams, and I don't think it's a stretch to say he's the second best player in this series. So, you know, you expect him to show up. You expect him to put up a certain amount of points. You expect him to come to each game and give that type of effort, at least that type of stat line, right? Whether it's 10, 10, and 10 or whatever it might be. I think he got, you know, you're not going to see a game as poorly as game one went for him, right? And again, it's not that his whole game was wrong. And I'll tell you this, man. I've been at games where he's played way worse than that. Just unfortunate that we lost that game.
Yeah.
And as we're going to get into NHL talk in a minute, I mean, there's many stars and bigger stars who have had way worse weeks than Kyle Lowry has had. And some of them aren't getting half the hate. And more than that, you know, we just watched yesterday And I'm as guilty as everybody else. You know, we live on the East Coast. It was a West Coast game between the Clippers and the Golden State Warriors, the best team in the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. And they blew a 31-point lead in a quarter and a half.
Unreal, man. I saw the highlights of that in the morning. I'm like, because I had gone to bed, right? I couldn't stay up for all of it. And I saw what the score was. I'm like, that's done. Get up in the morning and you're
so
like,
did I.
What happened? What did they just leave? Like, what happened?
Did they forget the fourth quarter?
Jesus,
they had to play it?
Christ, man. 31 point.
You know, we hear about this a lot in the NHL, right? Where people say, you know, any team is a good team, right?
Yeah, and parity and all that.
Parity, and especially when you get into the playoffs, you know, every team, you have to show up. You have to take everybody seriously.
Yeah.
But that just goes to show you any team in the NBA can win against any team on any day.
Yeah, apparently in a quarter and a half.
Yeah, and do I think does anybody think the Clippers are going to win the series? No. But that just goes to show you the overreaction sometimes in Toronto. And granted, you know, the Raptors have underachieved in the playoffs more than the Golden State Warriors have.
Yeah.
But nobody really thinks the Golden State Warriors are going to go, you know, go to lose, you know, the next 3 of 5. Right. But of course, in Toronto, that's always going to be the narrative.
Yeah.
I still expect this to wrap up in 5 games. I thought they were, you know, Orlando would probably take one game in Orlando. So the Raptors have a slightly tougher road now. But at the end of the day, this is still the cream of the East.
Sure.
And nobody should really be overreacting to one game where you lose by one possession.
So before we move over into a little bit of hockey talk, I want to remind our listeners, if you, while you're listening here, if you want to fire open your podcast app and leave us a rating and a review, 5 stars would be nice, but, helps keep us moving up the rankings there on Apple Podcasts. It only takes you a second. So, if you want to leave us a rating and a review, we'd really appreciate that. It was a crazy night in the NHL. We've seen both the Tampa Bay Lightning and Pittsburgh Penguins eliminated. If I could hit you with a list here: Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Phil Kessel, Chris Letang, Nikita Kucherov, Steven Stamkos, Victor Hedman, Andrei Vasilevsky, all eliminated from the playoffs tonight. The world championship team that the Russians are going to put together is going to be stacked, if you're interested in that, later in May. But that's a hell of a lot of stars that suddenly are just gone from the playoffs. Which one of those two stuns you the most?
Oh, it's got to be Tampa.
Yeah.
That's not even a question. I mean, Pittsburgh didn't have – they may, again, have the pedigree and the maybe the bigger household names.
Right.
But for, you know, the real fans who watch a lot of games, Tampa was just a whole nother level this year compared to any team that we've seen in years past.
Yeah. I don't think anyone saw this happening to Pittsburgh.
Not getting swept.
No, but yeah, I agree with you. Tampa going down this fat. First team to clinch a playoff spot, first team eliminated from the playoffs.
Yeah, and you know, I did get a chance to watch a couple of those Islander games, or at least part of the Islander games against Pittsburgh. One thing really struck me about that series, and it was that Pittsburgh looked old and slow.
They really did.
And I'm not saying Crosby looked old and slow, and I'm not saying Malkin looked old and slow. But Chris Letang looked old and slow.
Yeah.
And Schultz looked slow.
How about Jack Johnson and Eric Goodbranson? That is not a good defense that they brought in there. Like, I don't know what that was all about. And I kind of wonder, despite how good he was down the stretch, I'm still not sold on Matt Murray. And I know he's got 2 cups and they keep bringing him in whenever Fleury falters and they'd go to him. But that was a different Pittsburgh team than this Pittsburgh team. And he's struggled to carry the mail since the safety net of Marc-Andre Fleury disappeared and headed out to Vegas. And you know who hasn't struggled? Marc-Andre Fleury out in Vegas.
Yeah.
He's found a nice little career resurgence out there. That Pittsburgh team, like you, especially early in the series, although it only went 4 games, so it technically still early in that series, was crazy. Those games in Long Island, the fans were going nuts. There was all kinds of crazy shit happening all over the place. The Islanders were scoring at times like 30 seconds apart. it was intense. It was exciting. For a while, it was the most interesting series to me outside of the Toronto-Boston one, obviously, which we'll get to here shortly. I didn't find the Tampa-Columbus series as entertaining, but it was definitely intriguing to see what happened. And Tampa jumped up 3-0 in game one in the first period, and you're like, mm-hmm. well, that's how that's going to go. And Columbus came all the way back and won that one and never looked back.
Yeah, and before we get into that too much, man, there's just one point I want to hit on there.
Yeah.
You know, being in the hockey crazy towns that we both live in, yeah. And media towns as well, it's amazing what goalies can do yeah. when they're not getting booed
yeah.
consistently by their home team every time they go to the Applebee's and when they go to Eastside Mario's and when they go to the grocery store.
You got an it's Applebee's? Almost guys, I could use an Applebee's.
It's almost like, you know, a guy like Marc-Andre Fleury and a guy like Roberto Luongo, even though he's, you know, he's way more injury prone nowadays.
Sure, but yeah.
when he's not getting absolutely roasted walking down the street, you know, settle in a little bit, and right?
Find a little swagger again.
It's amazing. And, you know, part of it's media driven. Part of it's just fans just in the stadium, just giving people a hard time. Right.
Yeah.
I was at that Florida game in Toronto about a month ago now, and Luongo was supposed to have the night off, and I was a little disappointed. And within about 30 seconds, he was back in the game.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, even the Leaf fans gave him a loo.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I thought, that's the most cheering he's gotten in Canada in at least a decade since the gold medal, right?
For sure.
I honestly didn't get a chance to watch too much of the Tampa series, and part of it was I expected it to be a cakewalk yeah. for Tampa.
We only had one person in our picks who picked Columbus, and it was the 4-year-old.
And he's smarter than the rest of us.
Apparently.
Clearly. You know, there's nothing about Tortorella's coaching that inspires me.
No.
Nothing about Bobrovsky that usually inspires
yeah,
me.
Yeah, playoff Bob is not good Bob, but he was.
And he didn't have a great season to begin with.
Right.
They kind of struggled all year.
On him to leave at the end of the season. Everyone just yeah. assumes he's going to the Panthers, and yet here he was. He was great tonight.
They got Duchesne, who's typically. Every team he goes to, he kills.
Yes.
So, you know, there was no reason to pick them.
Right.
But good on them for just playing good old style playoff hockey. Well, and I think they just out-toughed a little bit of a Kypros thing, but
sure.
they were just a tougher team to play against than Tampa was.
And I've said this a few times on the show before now. I loved what Columbus did at the deadline. I don't think it was prudent long-term, but they don't have a long-term. Panarin says he's gone. Bobrovsky says he's gone. You need to go for it now. That franchise needed playoff wins. And when they went out and they did that, I loved it. Because you'd like to think that down the road, it's going to encourage other GMs to be more aggressive, to go for it when they yep. feel like their window is open. And
agreed.
Then they struggled for a little bit. They came in hot. I think they were like 7-2-1 in their last 10. But at first, after those moves, they were struggling to really find it. And the best they could do was that last wild card spot. And you went for it, but you drew Tampa. And you're like, well, fuck, right? And I thought, you know what, if they could just put up a fight and just, you know, push it a little longer, make it something. And it turned out they went way up and above that. And that really, like, for some reason, I got to be honest with you, I don't like Columbus. It's not even like one of those teams where I should be indifferent to them like Carolina. I genuenely don't like them.
But is it the cannon?
It might be the cannon, man. It might be Nick Foligno. I don't like him either, right? But there's just something about them that I don't like.
Oh, come on.
And
Sudbury's own, man.
Yeah. And so I'm sitting there watching them tonight going, if I stick to my original rationale that this is good for hockey, that these guys went for it and somehow got it done, then I got to be kind of happy. I also got to be kind of happy because if the Leafs somehow survive the Bruins, the path that seems to be opening a little. I don't think Columbus would be a cakewalk by any means, but it's better than Tampa. I think this one was as much on Tampa not being any good. You see Stamkos throwing cheap shots at the end of the game. You've got Kucherov getting suspended. They just melted down. They imploded.
Yeah, and it goes back to that old that old thought, right? Like the team that always clinches the President's Cup or President's Trophy, maybe they take their foot off the brake a little bit too much. Maybe they go in a little too high on their horse. And they just didn't look ready.
No.
And maybe going up 3-0 in that first game ended up being their downfall, right? Maybe they took their foot off the brake, and then they start, you know, that self-doubt starts to creep in.
And that's a good point you make.
You've never had that, like, you have to overcome something through the season.
And on the other side, Columbus is fired up. They have come in hot. They needed to be great down the stretch just to get in. And so we talk about this now and then. As you said, I clinched a playoff spot 2 months ago. Like, we're home and cooled and cruising, and it's hard to ramp it back up where these guys that we're playing right now, they're already on fire and playing playoff hockey. And you see it, you know, as you move through in both hockey and in basketball, someone who is coming off a game 7 win and 2 nights later has to play someone who swept their last series, has been sitting around for a week and a half. It's usually the game 7 team that rolls in those early couple of games, right? Because they're still geared right up. And I think there's something to that. I think Columbus had nothing to lose. No one picked them to win. They came in hot, and Tampa just could not find that intensity, could not match them.
See, and I always look at the coach when that happens.
Yep.
Right? Because the coach's job, and there was a great quote by Steve Kerr, and I can't remember if it was today or if it was the day before the game there. He said something about, you know, coaching is about 20% X and O's.
Yep.
And the other 80% is just being a psychologist. And you need to know, you know, you're the manager, you're the CEO, you're whatever you want to call it. You have to know your players in and out. You have to know the other team, and you have to know the situation, right?
Yep.
You need to know when to give them room, and you need to know when to light a fire under somebody's ass.
Yeah.
And I look at a guy like Babcock right now, who's definitely had his share of fire this year from the fans.
Yeah.
And maybe it's easier when you're playing a team like Boston that you know you hate and that the city hates and the team hates. But the Leafs and Boston are going at it game after game right now. And these are two teams that had their playoff spot locked up and knew they were playing each other for, God, what, a month?
Right.
Essentially, at least, I mean, maybe not statistically, but
in all likelihood, a month, yeah.
Right? And both teams have been able to come out with a fire under their ass. And you look at Tampa and Cooper right now, and I think Cooper's got to be in a hot seat right now.
Well, and it's funny because I do agree with you, but they did just sign him to an extension. Like, they can't possibly have seen this coming. And
or isn't Guy Boucher available again for them?
Oh, good Lord.
Is that not an option?
He is. I got to tell you, I would be okay if they wanted to tinker with the coach. I don't want to do much else. I think there's a certain amount that they got unlucky. This team accumulated the most points that any team has since 1996. In 96, it was Detroit. They got through the first round, but then lost to Colorado in the conference final. And the next 2 years, Detroit won the cup in 97 and in 98. So sometimes you have a week of a couple of guys having bad luck, or you face a hot goalie, or sometimes bad shit just happens. They're going to have a hard time kind of locking everybody up here and trying to get Braden Point and that deal done. But I wouldn't be ready to blow this up. I know they've had some early playoff exits, but that team is really good. And I just, you know, hockey people love to overreact. They love to overthink it. I think I'd be taking one more run at it with this group. If you're interested in tinkering with the coach, I can get on board with that. I don't want to change the roster much.
Well, and here I was thinking they were going to pull a Boston Bruins and trade Stamkos over to San Jose Sharks. Yeah. That was my first thought, but
I wouldn't do it.
All joking aside, you know, you mentioned Braden. We're going to have a tough time locking him up. You know, they've done some really good drafting over the years, and that, you know, that's why this team is so good right now. It's very interesting to me, and again, being in crazy hockey markets and listening to all the crazy hockey guys that we get a chance to listen to, it was always been interesting to me all season that, you know, the focus has been on Mitch Marner.
Yep.
And getting him signed and just forgetting about Braden Point.
Or Mikko Rantanen, like Matthew Tkachuk. There's all these guys, and apparently it's only Toronto that's going to get offer sheeted. It's only Mitch Marner that's going to be impossible to do. And you're like, all right.
The guy who
Patrick Laine's
best friends are on the team, right?
Yeah.
Who's playing in his hometown city and getting all the endorsement deals. He's the one we need to worry about, right?
But for sure.
Just as a side note on that, sorry.
Yeah. No, for sure.
Man, to just follow up on that point, I would agree with you. It would be very short-sighted to just turn your back on this team. And I tagged you on a tweet just before we got on there from Tampa, basically apologizing to their fans.
I saw that. What do you think of that?
I don't mind that.
I don't either.
That's the only thing they could do, right? I mean, that's a team, and it, you know, obviously they've given their social media person enough leeway to do stuff like this, but what else do you do? You say, hey, shit, our bad.
Yeah, well, we'll retweet it at Tall Can Audio if you want to follow us on Twitter, but it essentially just says, we know you're not happy, we know you're angry, we know there's nothing we can say right now that'll, you know, make you feel any differently. We get it. We feel it too. Thank you for being with us all year. And like you said, what else are they going to say right now? Right? Like, it's brutal. I'm still waiting. It's bad, but.
Yeah. And that's it, right? I mean, the whole organization has to be hurting. The entire fan base has to be hurting right now. It's an embarrassing way to go out after being a first place team. And they're not the first place team to be eliminated in the first round, but they're the first ones to be swept in the first round.
That's right.
And it's not a good look, but this is pro sports, right? And it's not just about skill. It's about emotion. There are, you know, energy swings. This shit happens.
Yep.
And it's unfortunate for that fan base. They're a great fan base. Obviously the best one in the South of the US, I think. And,
they've got
a great team. They've got a great team. And to think of all the times the Sharks could have just bailed out.
Yep. No, you got to stick with
through it.
Yeah.
And that's the only way to do it. I mean, unfortunately, as we know, only one team lifts the cup every year.
Well,
so
and we know it.
A lot of upset fan groups every year.
Well, we know this year it won't be Tampa that's going to lift that cup, man. The East, it's wide open now.
Wide open.
Now it is Pittsburgh gone, who I think everyone thought going in would at least put up a fight against the Islanders. I picked them to beat the Islanders. They were close in the standings. The Islanders ended up with home ice given the hot start that they had gotten off to back in the fall. But you know, you still got Washington. You know, Toronto and Boston are in a bit of a war. The East is completely unpredictable now. Like, there's some crazy shit that's going to continue to go down here. And we're seeing it everywhere. Colorado's up 2-1 on Calgary. People didn't see that coming. Obviously,
crazy surprise.
Yeah, the Penguins are getting swept. Leafs are up 2-1 right now on Boston. Like, everyone knew that would be a close series, but a lot of people picked Boston. So, I mean, we're seeing this everywhere. It's been a crazy first round, Matt.
Which is all you can ask for as a fan base, you know?
Yeah.
You know, a fan base of the NHL in total, right?
Yeah.
There's no fun when it's the same team. The same team's winning every year, right?
Right.
And eventually you have some parity come back into it, or you have a changing of the guard, right? We saw that in the NBA. Finally,
yeah, we talked about
LeBron
that.
Missed out, right?
Yep.
Maybe Golden State is at risk right now. And again, I don't think they're going to lose this series, but maybe it's more wide open than we thought.
Yeah,
right?
We know some of the news coming out of the East. Like, it's interesting over there, too.
We talked about the Denver Nuggets. Sorry, I just totally slipped my mind there for a second. But just about 30 seconds ago, it flashed on the TV screen that they came back. They were down in game two, having lost game one against the Spurs. Came back, and Jamal Murray hit some clinching shots there to win that game. So, you know, different teams are going to
It's fun when it's unpredictable.
Out of nowhere sometimes, right? And that's what makes sports amazing. And it's always nice to have a Cinderella story every once in a while. And hopefully the Columbus story ends when they face the Leafs in the next round. You only want that Cinderella
if, don't
story
say
going.
When. I'm not letting you come on here and say when. You can say if. I'm not. Let's not get crazy here.
Hey, why can't we be the Cinderella story?
Yeah,
that's all I'm saying.
It's true, man. Are you drinking anything tonight?
Oh, I went. I have no beer at the house outside of PBR, so I went with that, which actually Holly left here. So I went with Crown Royal did a special edition bourbon barrel.
Oh, yeah.
And I happened to be at the LCBO the night they actually put it out. So I asked them, I said, hey, you know, tell me about this. And they're all like, we literally put it out. We haven't tried it yet. I was like, well, it's no good. So, yeah, who knows how long I had been between LCBO visits, but
yeah,
I went back, St. Patrick's Day or the day before. And I was like, oh, I got no whiskey. I better go get myself a bottle of whiskey. So went to get a bottle, and that bottle was on sale.
Nice.
Like $8 off, which is like unheard of at the LCBO, right?
For sure, yeah.
And they had a sign saying, hey, this is only going to be on until, like, we're actually only going to keep this on the shelves until the end of March. So I said, oh, shit, I better buy it. So,
yeah.
And it's actually pretty good. Nice. It's definitely a little more bourbony flavor, but nothing close to an actual true bourbon.
Right.
Still a Canadian rye, but I don't, like, they put it in a bourbon barrel or something. Like, just a little bit different. And, yeah, it's nice.
Sweet.
Definitely has that evaporation problem in my house.
Yeah, that now happens.
I opened it up, you know, it's kind of
funny
working
how that works.
Way down, but yeah. I want to get through this one before I bought a bottle of the Conor McGregor whiskey.
Oh, yeah.
While I was down in the U.S., because you can't get it up here yet.
Okay.
And I did some research, and the LCBO has actually come in and said on their Twitter, we don't know when we're going to be able to bring it up.
Oh, really?
So when I was down in the U.S., I was like, well, I guess I better take my chances and buy it here.
Yeah.
So that's next on my list, but we'll see. You know, I'm not expecting too much from it, but
what's it called?
Perfect 12, or well, let me just double check. It's something 12, proper 12.
Okay.
Yeah, and it wasn't bad. I think I ended up getting it for like $25 US.
Okay.
Which ends up being like 35-ish, and yeah. I figure if it ever gets up here, it'll probably be closer to 40 to 50.
Right.
Given other I was just figuring, like, I know the Drake one, Virginia Black, they sell at about 45 or 50 bucks. So I was like, worth it to try something a little bit different, a little something new. And,
yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Could be shite, but. What are you drinking tonight?
Well, I am into the, I'm doing, as you know, the guys here at Nita did another, a mixed pack. Spring
yeah.
one this time with some other local brewers. Today's selection was from Calabogie Brewing Company, who I normally really like. But today's beer was called Five Island Watermelon. And that's not really Matt's speed. It's a nice sour. I'm not going to shit on it. It's just not my style of beer, right?
Yeah.
And I can see a lot of listeners, you know, on a hot summer day or just if you're more into that kind of thing. Enjoying it, but it's just not really my style. So, you know, it was what it was for me today. And now I'm back into, I was back over to the Broadhead Brewing Company. I don't know.
Yeah.
You search it, you'll find them. And I grabbed another keg from them of their Grindstone Amber Ale. And so I've got that on tap.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Oh, it's nice. So, I like that. We're having that on draft tonight, and it's kind of. Little more Matt speed than the watermelon sour. So, but if you are interested in such thing, either Matty or to our listeners, it's called Five Island Watermelon from the Calabogie Brewing Company. So it's worth checking out if that's your thing. Just before we jump into the Leafs and Bruins, I wanted to just put a bug in everybody's ear in case somehow they may have missed it. Talkan Sports 315. We recorded on Sunday. We had Ian Mendez of TSN 1200. People have no doubt seen him around on Sportsnet. He's covered the Olympics, the World Series, World Cup, all kinds of stuff. Super interesting guy, super friendly, super generous with his time. Sat around, had a couple beers with us, talked about his career, talked about the current playoff landscape, obviously talked about Tiger Woods finally winning another major, as that had just happened about an hour before we started recording with him. So we really appreciated him giving us his time. If you haven't had a chance to check that out, it's at TallCanAudio.com. It's TallCan Sports 315, or of course you can find it on your podcast app. But I thought it was a really good conversation, so definitely if you have a chance, go and check that one out. Why don't we talk a little bit about, by the time people are listening to this, Game 4 of the Leafs and Bruins will be, we'll call it tonight. Our friend here, Matty Lang, has tickets. He will be in the building and manning our Instagram account at Talkin Audio if you want to follow along there. Had to make a painful trade, though, I understand, to get these Leaf tickets.
I don't want to tell you how many people I had to hurt to get these tickets.
Okay. What have you seen so far? From where I'm sitting, I thought the Leafs played great in Game 1, and Boston really didn't. I thought Boston played great in Game 2, and the Leafs really didn't. I thought Game 3 was a game that they both played real well, and the Leafs managed to squeak one out. It was a tight game, is sort of where I'm at with it. What have you seen, anything different?
No, it's definitely been a seesaw battle. And it might have been you I was texting. I was texting you and my buddy Mark, and after that, we went up 2-1 there on Monday night. I had sent a text message to one of you two saying, we need another one. I'm just not comfortable with this. And immediately after the Leafs scored to make it 3-1, Boston answered immediately right after.
Yeah.
This is exactly the series we thought we were going to get, right? We knew these were the two most evenly matched teams in the playoff brackets, being the fourth and fifth best teams in the league over the season.
Yeah, this was the main event.
These are two teams that are just, they match up well. The Leafs have shown to be a little bit faster and maybe a little bit more deep than the Bruins.
Yeah.
The Bruins are still a little bit stronger, let's say, a little grittier.
Yep.
And it's making for some really exciting hockey. I think the goalies have both been really good. You know, both having a little bit of problems on, you know, different games, but for two fan bases who tend to crush their own goalies, I thought both guys are showing up. Freddie and Tuukka Rask, both of them playing pretty well. I think what we're seeing out of the Leafs, and, you know, I'd love to hear your opinion about this too, but especially in Game 3, I thought the Leafs really showed another level. And they showed an ability to just dig a little bit deeper as far as playoffs go. They weren't backing down. They took that counterpunch in Game 2. And unlike past series against Washington and against Boston, they manned up. And I hate to use that term, but they manned up. They took the hits. They gave them back. They were down blocking shots. They didn't seem to be backing away. They weren't running around the puck too much outside of maybe that second goal for Boston.
Right.
But that's was my feeling watching it. I mean, as I was gripping my my beer and was breaking the glass for most of that game, in absolute just panic most of the game.
Yeah.
But it was an exciting game, and I think the Leafs are really showing that they can be gritty. And it's hard because we've been watching this team for 3 years, and when you watch a team for 3 years in the playoffs, just inherently you start to forget how young these guys are.
Yes.
And knowing that our best players outside of Johnny T are all 22 and 23 years old players, guys are still
Marner
around.
And Matthews still at 21, right?
Like, still at 21.
Yeah,
they're still kids playing against men.
Yeah,
and they're only going to continue to get stronger. And I think that early success that they had a couple years ago, out of nowhere, now is starting to pay dividends. Right now, we were starting to see they can rely on that experience and they know how to play in these games.
Yeah, that's an interesting point because I think 2 years ago when they faced Washington, remember it came right down to the second last game of the season before they squeaked in that big game against Pittsburgh, the big save McElhaney made on Crosby because Freddie had gotten hurt.
Yeah.
And no one really expected them to be there. They had just drafted Matthews. Marner had not played in the league yet. Nylander
I got to stop you there for a second because just randomly I was at that game.
Really?
And even being at that game, I went with my buddy Mark and we're like, well, this has been a fun season.
Yeah.
This went a lot farther than it was supposed to.
And if Sid punches us out tonight, then maybe that's what was supposed to happen, right?
And in all expectations, expecting that to happen.
Right. Especially once Freddie goes down and
I remember that save on Crosby, and then we win the game, and just looking at each other like,
we're back in the
holy fuck.
Playoffs? Yeah.
Well, I guess we're having fun. Like,
yeah, and so, but they arrived early, right? And so they play Washington, and they play them tough. It's a six game series, but five of them are decided by one goal, And it changed the curve a little. If you just miss on the last weekend, everybody goes, wow, look at these kids. Awesome season. Definitely. Wish we'd have made it, but didn't quite do it. And then last year, you faced Boston, and you'd go, okay, well, first time back in the playoffs, you know, they pushed them hard, no big deal. And now this year is kind of that second. But getting there a year early with Washington made last year feel like you should be taking another step when really your guys are still only 20 years old. I think it's interesting you bring up the age because that is so easy to forget now because they've had a couple runs at this. But this is still a really young group. And
a very, very young group. And, you know, typically in past years, we've always said, you know, why did they bring these guys up so early?
Yeah.
Right? You look at those teams like Detroit towards the end of their run, right?
Yep.
Where they would keep their guys in the minor leagues until they were 22, 23.
Yep.
They wouldn't even get a sniff of the big leagues until that point, until they understood the system, until they knew what they were going to do in the big leagues. They had a couple games to test them out.
Yeah,
and they would play on the third line for a while.
That's right.
And what happened was we had really outstanding players within 3 years, three draft years, who could all play on the first and second line.
Yeah.
And I agree that that really changed that curve. And you look at it now and you go, well, if we didn't have those 2 years, we probably can't sniff at even having a meeting with Tavares.
Right. No, it's true, man.
Right. If we don't have that little bit of success at the beginning, this just doesn't happen. So I do agree. It made it, it made the expectations unattainable.
Yeah. Well, and you know what to me has been the biggest thing? And this is after, despite having a 47 goal regular season, despite coming home and all the hype and everything, this is what you brought John Tavares back for. He's a veteran guy. He's a bigger, stronger guy. And he's playing Bergeron fucking hard, right? And
oh my God.
And it's not like he's big hits and all kinds of stuff like that, but he's playing Bergeron-style game. I'm going to be great in the face-off circle. I'm going to be responsible at both ends. I'm going to be on your ass all the time. And we didn't have that before. They didn't want that to be Matthews. Kadri's not bad at it when he's not missing half a series apparently every year. But this is totally different, right? Tavares, Marner, Hyman are keeping that top line for now in check. And as long as that's the case, the Leafs' depth should win out. It took a hit when Kadri left, but it should still be enough if Tavares, Marner, and Hyman can saw off Bergeron, Pasternak, and Marchand. Just to even. You don't have to be better. Just be even. Because the Leafs' depth should be enough. And to me, watching coming down the stretch, they didn't look anywhere near as rattled as they did last year, right? They didn't look... When the Leafs were winning a couple of games against Boston in that series last year, there was still a ton of just, holy fuck, just holding on at the end, hoping Freddie... It doesn't feel like that. It's still tense. It's playoff hockey. But it doesn't feel like we're just holding on for dear fucking life here. It's under control.
Yeah, and as boring as a guy as John Tavares is when you hear him do an interview,
yeah,
that's the type of guy you want on the ice with 55 seconds
just
left.
Brad Marchand early on's bipping at him and taking and Tavares is just skating away. He's not even looking at him. Like, get out of here with this shit, right? Like...
Yeah, that's exactly.
Can't rattle
him. You want guys like him. You want guys like Crosby who just don't give a shit.
Yeah.
We were texting at the end of the game about just how good he'd been on the faceoff.
Yeah.
And you cannot undersell that. And I know, you know, Babcock coming from Detroit, and Detroit has been for 20 years just so obsessive about their faceoffs and what that does to puck possession. And, you know, even to the casual fan, you understand puck possession at the end of a game in your own end makes a big fucking deal.
Yeah.
But all game, John Tavares is just taking the puck away from Boston and putting us in a position to control the play, control the puck. It's been outstanding. And I know he's been squeezing the stick a little bit tight when he's been in down low against Tuukka Rask.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
He's also
I'm
being charged. And I'll tell you this, man. You've already said it. The fact that our top line – for the first time in years, is not only our top offensive line, but essentially our top defensive line
right now. Yeah.
And I think that can't be understated because I can't remember the last time Toronto had a line even going back to the Sundin years.
Nope.
That was your top defensive line, right? And you go back to that series, you know, the series against Boston, when you got guys like Kessel and Bozak and JVR, they can't be on the ice against another team's top line.
No, that's right.
They couldn't.
Yeah.
And when you need a goal and it's tie game or it's overtime, well, guess what?
Yeah. What does that do? Because their line's going to keep coming out. So are you going to leave yours on the bench?
You can't put Leo Komarov on there and expect him to score goals, man. Like, that's just unfair, right?
Yeah.
So having these guys out there is just – and guys like Hyman who can play great two-way hockey, and Connor Brown, that's the difference with this Leaf team.
Yeah. Well, and, like, things could go horribly wrong in game four. Like, this could still be a really long series, right? But if you were to tell me right now that the Bergeron line – will not score another goal in this series, but it also means that the Tavares line can't score another goal, I would take that in a heartbeat. Heartbeat, because we still got Matthews, we still got Nylander, we still got all these pieces. David Krejci? I'm not scared of David Krejci, right? Like, he's been good. He's had a good season. But our depth will win out over their depth if you can call the rest, the top line versus top line, even, right? And man, Mitchie's been great. Hyman running over Zdeno Chara in game three was fantastic to watch. Trevor Moore's done it. Kasperi Kapanen's laid some licks on him. Like, they're not afraid of this guy. And man, it's been interesting to watch. And I still think this is going to be a long series. I still think Boston's going to put up a fight. But
I hope by long series you mean five games, because my heart can't handle it.
Oh, man, it's been hard. It's been tough to sit and watch. But I think if this is the version of the Leafs that we're going to get, you know, you're in great shape. You're in great shape. If this is what you're going to, they don't have to win in Boston again. You can win game four at home, and you can win game six at home, and that's enough. Boston has to beat you in Toronto now.
Yep. And it's going to be really interesting to see how both teams come out.
I agree.
And I think we all know Boston's going to come out with a fire under their ass, because that's the type of team they are. They're going to play hard-nosed hockey. They've got the talent to back it up. They've got guys who can do both. It's going to come down to how do these Leafs respond. And like we said, right, still young guys. And how do they come out? Do they buy into the hype after going up 2-1? Can they weather that storm at the beginning of the game that we know is going to happen?
Yeah.
Can they hold back? Can they not take stupid penalties and let Boston into it? Because we know, as we've seen the first three games, the refs aren't going to call everything on Boston until they absolutely have to.
That's right.
For better or for worse, that's the way it's going to be. And the Leafs are going to take an easy penalty at some point. And both these power plays have been really good, and they're very intimidating power plays. I don't think the penalty kills have been bad for either team. I just think the power plays are so dynamic and have such talented players, it's hard to hold them off the score sheet at that point.
It's true, man. Like I said, we're now probably, you know, just hours away from puck drop on that one by the time most people are listening to this. I think it's going to be, man, I don't even know. I have no prediction, right? I could see Toronto coming out full of piss and vinegar, feeling confident, defending home ice just like they did in the last one. I could see Boston ready to rebound. I think the one thing that we haven't touched on yet, and it bugs me a little bit because I just think it's being talked about not quite enough, is Freddie, who has been fantastic. And he's chucking down like a 945 save percentage in this series, which is unreal. And even in game two, when the Leafs did not show up, he did. He did his job, or that's a fucking laugher. And, you know, that's a huge thing for them because, you know, coming into the series, there were questions about him in the playoffs because he hadn't been great in the last two series, really. But man, he's been awesome, and if he's going to give them that confidence and if he's going to give them that kind of goaltending, save for Mitchie bailing him out there at the very end with a couple of shot blocks at the end of game three, man, if that's what he's going to bring, they're going to be okay. And yeah, it's weird because of Tavares, because of the Kadri suspension, because of Nylander getting moved around, all this stuff. Somehow, we're not talking about our starting goaltender in the playoffs, and he's been awesome. And you know, if he hadn't been awesome, we'd be talking about him.
Yeah, and like we talked about a little bit, you know, kind of tongue in cheek with some of these other goalies. It's got to be one of the toughest positions to play in a big hockey market, right? Because you just can't win.
Yeah.
There's absolutely no winning in a hockey market if you're the goalie, because you're always going to be the fall guy no matter what happens.
Yep.
And unfortunately, in playoff hockey, it tends to come down to one goal at a time and one mistake at a time. And a lot of times the goalies get blamed for that mistake, even if it's the, you know, missing a back checker or the defenseman sure. bites too early or whatever it might be. I mean, a lot of the goals on a guy like Matt Murray, who you brought up, were just it was game three. I watched quite a bit of.
Right.
Man, the Islanders were putting it bar down. You know, like they were just coming down 2-on-1 and putting it bar down.
Yeah.
And you're looking at, I'm looking at Matt Murray going, this poor fucking guy.
Yeah, what's he supposed to do about that? Yeah.
You know, these guys are putting it in the perfect spot to beat him. These are sharpshooters in the NHL, and he's getting absolutely no help from his defense.
Yeah.
No help from his forwards. And you know, he's going to hear about it the next day on SportsCenter.
For sure.
Freddie's gotten, I thought, you know, and granted, he hasn't been amazing in the past two playoff first rounds that the Leafs have played in.
Yep.
But we also went against two teams that were pretty good teams.
Yep.
You know, if the Leafs had had better draws, maybe that goes a little bit differently for Freddie and for the Leafs. Now, if he continues to have a 940 save percentage,
you're going to be fine.
You're going to be fine, right? And I think statistically and historically, you look at this, you know, if you have a goalie who's getting a 930, 940 save percentage, God, you only got to put two goals in.
Yeah, exactly.
Most days, and you could be pretty safe that you're going to win. So we can't expect him to do this every game.
Right.
But we also know that a goalie who gets locked in is dangerous.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? And he can carry you a long way. We've seen that over the years and for a number of different teams.
And when a goalie gets locked in, it tends to give players in front of him.
Yeah,
it gives players in front of them real good confidence. So I think having a couple good games is only – and it's going to help the Leafs,
yeah.
right, open up a little bit offensively. I think there's still another level I think we'd all love to see them get to. Hard to do against Boston. Hard to do because they're such a tough checking team, sound team, talented team. But God, man, it's been good hockey so far. And as a Leaf fan, as you and I are, it'd be very hard. Even if it was, you know, if we were down 2-1, I still think you'd be comfortably confident at this point, right? Because 2-1 either way, I think is still a 50-50 series, essentially.
Absolutely, man. It's been awesome. It's been quite a night. It's been quite a couple of days across the Canadian sports landscape with the Raptors. Hey, the Jays won again tonight. That's kind of something we can get to some other time. Leafs are doing
they're still around, eh?
Yeah, they're still doing their thing, man. So you know what? We'll wind this one down. There's a ton to come. It's been a crazy couple of days. We'll kind of keep pounding these out whenever we can and whenever we get the chance. But I thought tonight was a good night for it, just given the Raptors playoff game and how much it got on with the playoffs. Maddie, as always, we appreciate your time, my friend. I know you're going to have a hell of a night down at the Leaf game.
Thank you, buddy, and thanks for having me on again. For everybody listening to this in the morning, make sure you guys are following Tall Can Audio on Instagram.
He's taking over.
I'll be doing the takeover tomorrow at the game, and hopefully be there a little bit early. I'm trying to get there down to the arena at least half an hour early, just absorb some of the atmosphere around the game, and get some good snaps and get some good shots up online, and let everybody be able to follow along from the game as well.
And as always, you can give Matty a follow on Instagram. He's got a great physio blog and all kinds of stuff going on at Matt Does Physio. So worth hitting that up. Like I said, we'll wind this one down. If you haven't had a chance yet, I know I mentioned it earlier, but I think it was a really good show. Tall Can Sports 315, we had Ian Mendez in. That was terrific. So if you haven't had a chance yet, you can check that out. We're on Twitter and Instagram at Tall Can Audio. As we wind this one down, we'll catch you all on the next episode.
Yeah! Thanks for listening. You can get more TCA at tallcanaudio.com or by searching Tall Can Audio on your favorite podcast app.